When you then go on to slow respiration, this... I'm just trying to think how to get the balance right. Slow respiration, or what about the Zantafel cycle? In ecological terms. I mean, basically, when you start to impose drought stress on a plant, the stomata start to close, and they normally start to close around midday. And that's why I talk in my lectures, and I give them this absolutely classic paper on the midday depression of photosynthesis. And in that paper, which is the Tenhunen et al. One, it shows how when you get high temperatures and high vapor pressure deficit and high light intensity at midday, the stomata respond to those, and they override the need for CO2 inside the leaf, and they, by sensing this, that this evaporative demand is, if you like, more dangerous for the leaf than the benefits that would be obtained from taking up CO2 in the high light, which is obviously incident also, and therefore there's going to be a potential danger for photoinhibition under the high light if you haven't got so. But the stomata override that and they close, and what you can then analyze within that system is the way that not only does the whole Calvin cycle adjust to changes in availability of CO2, you also get the changes in the light harvesting system going on and the Zantafel cycle. So you can't separate out the effects, it's simply. So let's finish off the light harvesting stuff, the Zantafel cycle. What will happen under plants which are repeatedly subjected to high light, and when their stomata are likely to close because of the progressive water deficits, will be that increasingly they will get bigger and bigger pools of Zantafels which are converted from carotenoids, which then occur in the pigment bed, and they will... the whole chloroplast process will acclimate to allow them to have a greater capacity to engage the Zantafel cycle, to switch to zeaxanthin, so that at the middle of the day, what you basically find is that if the stomata do close at the middle of the day, then you just upregulate and you get this huge conversion of the zeaxanthin, and the plant can help to dissipate a lot of that excess light. And so photoinhibition in its worst sense, which is the kind of the is it chronic or is it I can never work it out whether it's chronic or acute.
Chronic is the word.
Chronic is the long term. So chronic is when you just get it every day, isn't it? You know, that chronic photoinhibition is usually helped out or overcome just by the Zantafel cycle. No problems. Acute photoinhibition occurs when you really hit the plant, or you really stress it, or you've just, you know, like, it's more of a, for natural vegetation, it doesn't really very often happen. You might see it in maize plants, you can get sun scald in maize plants, and you certainly see it in your house plants, if you ever leave a house plant behind, you know, these crinkly windows, the glass, which actually helps to focus the light. If you leave a house plant behind it, and the sun shines through, it gets focused onto a leaf, and zap, you know, it literally scorches the leaf away. So you can get this acute photoinhibition occurring, although it's more of an experimental phenomenon. Because under natural conditions, plants obviously try to balance out so that they can maintain their growth cycle throughout what are the normal conditions of growth. And you then get into this acute photoinhibition when not only the Zantafel cycle is now cannot cope, even though it cannot cope, you get all these molecular processes going on with the separation of the reaction cores from the accessory pigments going on, and all these kind of molecular separations going on. Zantafel cycle can't cope, and then you start to get the damage of the D1 protein, which is the primary receptor of electrons in photosystem 2. When the rate of damage exceeds the rate of repair, and I don't know whether Catherine told you, but I think it's about every 45 minutes to an hour, each D1 protein turns over, which means that in order to turn over, the reaction center has to migrate out of the oppressed region of the thylakoid membranes into the non-oppressed region, where it's accessible to the little dwarves in the chloroplast with their little toolkit, where they knock out the broken D1 protein and insert a new one, and then the whole reaction center then migrates back into the oppressed region, reassociates with the peripheral light harvesting complex, kicks it on. So that when that rate of turnover is exceeded by the rate of damage of those D1 proteins, then you've got acute photoinhibition. And then you start to get chlorophyll bleed. Then you get this overexcitation. You get the reactive oxygen damage. You get the building up, and you get chlorophyll bleaching ultimately. So that's the kind of progression that you would get. So you rarely get it under natural conditions, and it's more of an artificial thing that, that people have used, because most natural vegetation, very sensibly, is adapted to acclimates to the progressive onset of any stress, and so you rarely see it. And one of the ways that they react, they acclimate, if in terms of, in addition to the magnitude of the Zantafil cycle, is also in terms of this regulation of the Calvin cycle and regulation of Rubisco. And this is what I teach them, as which is this coordinated response as part of the midday depression of photosynthesis. So what you find there is that, I mean, in simple terms, if you imagine that the stomata were to close at the midday when light was very high, you would expect that the internal CO2 inside the leaf would be drawn down to extremely low levels, because you've still got light being absorbed, you've got the driving photochemistry, so therefore naturally CO2 will be gobbled up inside the leaf till you approach the conversation point. You would think. It doesn't happen though. Well, if you actually measure the gas exchange during this so-called midday depression of photosynthesis, the internal CO2 concentration stays quite high. And so that's why this very elegant study analysed the efficiency of photosynthesis, and they showed that during that midday depression, the actual whole the operating efficiency of Rubisco declines. So the initial slope of what's the ACI curve, which is the way you can plot the efficiency of photosynthesis, which they did during their practical, to interpret the difference between C3 and C4 plants. You know, the operating efficiency of a C4 enzyme is much steeper than a Rubisco, than is much steeper than C3 Rubisco, because of this wasteful photorespiration that's going on in the C3 system. But what you see in the C3 system is during the drought, in the midday depression, is that that efficiency declines still further. So the whole maximum rate of Rubisco catalysis declines at midday. The compensation point increases, which tells you that there are two things going on. One is the number of active sites in Rubisco which are engaged in catalysis are reduced, probably because Rubisco activase, the enzyme that helps activate those active sites, is downregulated at high temperatures. It's heat labile, so it gets above 35 degrees C, Rubisco activase goes and takes a siesta, or it falls apart. So you get less active sites being engaged in catalysis, which reduces your maximum rate of assimilation. You also get more of those remaining active sites which are engaged in catalysis interacting with an oxygen rather than a CO2. So you switch to oxygenase activity. And that you can see because the compensation point's gone up. Okay? So the two processes mean that, in contrast to some people who maintain dogmatically that sort of acute drought stress brings is the repression of photosynthesis is brought about by loss of ATPase activity, and I do this in my part two lectures, which is why it's kind of it's all a bit fresh up here at the moment. In actual fact, during the onset of progressive and gradual drought stress, the leaf responds in a coordinated fashion. The stomata start to close at midday. The photochemical apparatus, photoinhibition, zeaxanthin formation starts to protect the photochemical side. The dark reaction side is just progressively downregulated during the during that closure of stomata, and then during the afternoon it recovers again. Right, so you can just follow that. You can track the recovery in the afternoon just as you can track it becoming less efficient at midday. And so that means that by using these combination of things, you stave off these really vicious, nasty effects of photoinhibition, which are kind of said to occur, and they really don't very happen because it's all a nice staged, controlled progression. If you then progressively the drought stress the plant still further, what tends to happen is that the stomata tend to close in the afternoon, and you just restrict the amount of fixation you get to early in the morning, and ultimately, if the drought stress gets too bad, then yes, you will get, as you say, acute photoinhibition. everything else will just go crisp and leaves will dry, die up, fall off. So
what about low temperatures? How does that fit into it?
Well, low temperatures is equally well. You are more likely to get photoinhibition at low temperatures, perhaps, than under drought stress, because really, under those conditions, it's the mobility of the membranes, the fluidity of the membranes, which you decrease. And so when you then realize that if repair of photoinhibition relies on reaction centers shuttling backwards and forwards in and out of the non-oppressed parts of the membrane, then if you slow down the fluidity of the membrane, then you're going to decrease that capacity for repair, together with the actual decreased activation energy of all the biochemical reactions that are helping the repair, the manufacture. So it's that sense of repair that's going on that will, and that you can under low temperatures probably get more, you'd be more likely to see acute photoinhibition than under drought if it was imposed very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, the Scots pine, the boreal trees, and this is the work that I think I quoted in my temperature lectures,
mm-hmm.
where they again have this remarkable capacity. They basically repackage, as winter comes on, they repackage the photochemical systems and just basically dissociate most of the peripheral LHC2
mm-hmm.
and just basically package it away from the reaction centers.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that has the effect of, you know, preventing this excess light absorption, because if you like, they've just disconnected them. So that's why these plants can basically tolerate these, you know, very -20 degrees C by day plus bright sunlight,
mm-hmm.
even, and they don't get photoinhibited at these amazing temperatures. So that's the sort of, that's how I would account for temperature effects
mm-hmm.
on photoinhibition.
Yep.